Now we're in week 8. Welcome back. Now we are going to start talking about some different opportunities that there are in mental health issues. We worked on some really deep ethereal work last time. Today this is much more tangible, straightforward, cool stuff. Not nearly as deep, and that's the stuff I actually love. But these are just great habits and great things and great tools that we pick up. So, let's jump in. We had the gift of disorientation last time. We talked about this breaking down and this building up. You're probably really sick of that slide. We had the gift of reorientation, that gift of being built back up, that gift of learning what it is anew that things that we're going through. But I want to say there's some other things that we learn with mental health issues that aren't necessarily just these issues of who am I, who is God. Some of it has to deal with how we take care of ourselves and how we move forward with our lives and the habits that we pick up along the way. And those things change us as much as the deeper work that we do. So let's jump in. Things like physical care. We talked in the very beginning about self-care and how important it was to exercise. Well, if you build the habit of exercise, because it takes care of your brain, it makes it a lot easier to exercise to take care of your body, because you're already taking care of your brain. In my case, I run, and I run because it makes me happy and it makes my brain feel better, not because I want to be in the best shape of my life. So, I take care of myself because my brain demands it. And I get the extra added bonus that then my body likes it too. It's pretty great. We also talked about sleep. How important it is to get the right amount of sleep. I'm just going to leave that there for a second with you because puppies are great. How important it is to get the right amount of sleep, how important it is to take care of your body, how God demands Sabbath, how you need to make it a habit to rest and relax and slow down. This is something you need to engage in regularly to make sure that you can continue to move and continue to be ready for the things that you want to do. Right? Rest is what allows us to fully engage in the parts of life that we want to fully engage with. That takes good rest. Next, we talked about diet. We talked about eating right. I talked about my love of vegetables. This looks so yummy to me. I would take all the vegetables. We talked about how important it is to eat well and take care of ourselves so that our meds work. But it also forms a habit. If I eat well, my body's going to do better. I'm going to have less inflammation in my body. I'm going to have more ability to feel better because I'm eating regularly and I'm eating things that take care of me. Right? Long term, this will do me a lot more favors than just helping my mental health. But what if there's even more than that? In The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg talks about what habits do. And one of the things he talks about is keystone habits. And those are our habits that change other habits. For instance, if a person wants to lose weight, they can cut calories out of their diet and they can lose weight. They can also decide that they are going to exercise. They might have other plans too, like trying a different diet, doing intermittent fasting, whatever they decide to do, there's lots of things that you can do. But what's interesting is there are also keystone habits. These are the things that if someone changes something, it ends up changing a lot of things because it creates a domino effect. And one habit changes another habit, changes another habit, changes another habit. What's interesting is one of those keystone habits that changes things is exercise. That if you exercise, it changes how your body functions, and it starts demanding different and more nutritious food. When you start exercising, it changes your diet. When you start changing your exercise and your diet, it also changes your sleep patterns, because you're able to fall asleep easier at night, and your body will demand sleep. It'll also sleep deeper, so you'll wake up more refreshed. And that changes how you feel, and that changes how you function. And all of a sudden, you've got this domino effect that has gone downhill because you changed one thing. The only thing that you consciously changed was, I'm going to exercise every day. And everything else falls down from there. So, a really important thing with mental health issues is that you will necessarily form keystone habits, and they are just to make sure that your meds work. How great is that? You also form other keystone habits that have nothing to do with your meds, but you will require, in order for you to keep reaping the benefits, in order for you to find stability and live a thriving life. Because with mental health issues, there are just things that you have to do. So you have opportunities to learn long-term skills that end up compounding on each other over time and getting better and better and better, precisely because they will make you well in the short term. Now, in The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg talks about the key to changing habits. And the key is this. The golden rule, as he calls it. The golden rule has influenced treatment for alcoholism, obesity, obsessive compulsive disorders, and hundreds of other destructive behaviors. And understanding it can help anyone change their own habits. This is the key. The cue for an old activity is the key to the new habit. There is always a cue to a behavior. So if you are a smoker, the habit might be, I reach in my pocket. The habit might be, the cue might be, the break bell goes off at work, that it's time for a smoke break. Whatever that cue is, when you make this behavior happen, that cue has to change in order for it to start doing a new thing. For me, I have specific cues that kind of set me up in my day that end up being kind of silly, but they work for me. One of my cues is that I keep a journal right next to my bed. And I don't journal before I go to sleep because I'm a morning person. I really am just ready to go to sleep as soon as I can. It's because in the morning when I wake up, the first thing I can do, I can hit my journal for a couple minutes and kind of empty out my head a little bit and start feeling great about my day. One of my other cues, I don't allow myself to eat breakfast until I exercise most days. And that's because if I eat breakfast first, I feel like I'm going to throw up. So I just have a cue built in. My workout stuff, a lot of the time I'll leave next to my bed so that I can just crawl out of bed, find my stuff, do my thing, get going, straight ahead in the morning. Whatever your cue is towards an old habit, it needs to be a cue towards a new habit. Right? So, think about your cues. Think about the things that drive you. You might have a habit that you name it, drink 6 cups of coffee in the day. Why do you drink 6 cups of coffee? Because these cues affect me. Okay. Well, you'll have to slowly reduce that because that's quite a dependency. And as you do, you'll develop new cues, and they'll do different things. Maybe instead of saying, hey, I need to drink 6 cups of coffee, you'll be able to say, hey, I need to drink 6 cups of lemon water. Great. Do it. Whatever it is that makes you happy. But the cue can form an old habit into a new habit. Maybe that cue is, hey, I know that I need to eat breakfast every morning, so I need to take my meds. Do whatever you need to do to make those habits happen for wellness. But then something great happens. As you grab onto those cues and change them from old habits to new habits, you get a compounding effect. The momentum of habits. Some habits have the power to start a chain reaction, changing other habits as they move through an organization. Some habits and others' words matter more than remaking businesses and lives. And then a huge body of studies has shown that small wins have enormous power and influence disproportionate to the accomplishments of small victories. Small wins are a steady application of a small advantage. Okay, so what happens is you gain an advantage. All of a sudden, now you're eating better. Your body feels a little bit better. So you can improve in another area. Because you have more energy at work, you're able to apply yourself a little more. Because you have more energy because you're exercising, you're able to apply yourself a little more. Because you're sleeping better, your medications are working better, so you're able to apply yourself a little bit more to something else. And these habits slowly build on each other, one after another, after another, after another, and they form momentum. In the business world, sometimes they call it the flywheel effect. It takes a lot of energy to get it moving. A flywheel is transfers energy from your engine towards the rest of your car. And that flywheel, it takes a long time to get going because it's heavy and it spins. But then once you get your flywheel moving, it maintains a lot of momentum and it keeps moving. And that same thing is true of habits. They take a lot of time and energy to get them going, but once they get going, they move a lot of stuff. He continues, so what are the implications around self-care? What if I take care of myself and suddenly that improves how the rest of my life is going? That improves my work, that improves my attitudes, that improves how well I'm doing as a person, it improves everything. And it started just because I needed my meds to work better. How about my routine? What if I improve my routine and start seeing steady habits grow and develop out of that routine? What happens if it happens because of exercise? And I hit a keystone habit that changes another habit, changes another habit, changes another habit, and all of a sudden I see this incredible momentum build because I did something. And I can apply that momentum towards other things in my life. What if it's because of diet? And now I'm feeling better, so I'm able to apply that advantage. What if it's because of community? That I feel more known and more understood, and so I'm able to know and more deeply understand. I'm able to more fully step into who I am and more fully help others experience who they are. I'm able to be in relationship more deeply and more fully as I get more understanding of myself through this process. And that advantage keeps building. What about therapy? My stuff isn't holding me back anymore. My childhood trauma isn't holding me back. My preconceived notions of myself aren't holding me back. The things that have broken me aren't holding me back. And suddenly I'm able to apply that advantage. And what if reconnection and reintegration are in that same space? What I want to point out for you is that mental health, in some ways, just in the habits and the way you live your life, is an incredible opportunity. A lot of people will never want to go see a therapist. If you're forced to see a therapist, you can form a habit around it where you continue to improve. A lot of people will never want to do the work of reconnection and reintegration. Once you start that work, you have the opportunity to continue in what we call that hermeneutical spiral, that how what we know of God informs how we read, informs how we know God, informs how we read. And so I just keep knowing God better and better as I get to re-know Him and begin to reintegrate. These are amazing opportunities that a lot of people never take advantage of because they never have something that disorients them enough that they can reorient towards something else. So take advantage of it. This is a great opportunity to do really hard, really, really great work. So I want you to think a little bit of self-work as a habit. What self-work do you want to do? And how could that continue to improve you? You don't need to play this out long-term. You don't need to figure out how this is going to impact your life in every way, shape, and form. In fact, I think that would probably be a waste of time for a lot of people, because to come up with this huge map and then find out that if you can only keep a habit for the next week, it doesn't really matter because it won't have time to move downhill. Instead, I would ask you to fully invest in doing one thing well. Just one thing. If you say, hey, I'm going to read every night because I want to know more about me and more about what's going on with this mental illness, do it. If you say, hey, I need to sleep better, so I'm going to work on turning off my technology 3 hours before bed, keeping my technology away from me and keeping blue lights away from me and trying to see if I can sleep a little better, do it. If you want to, whatever your self-work is, you know the work you need to do. But go ahead and leverage it. Start. I think this is really what happens at the beginning of the year with New Year's resolutions every year. We have an opportunity to leverage something new, to push ourselves into self-work that we wanted to do before, and now we just have this clean break every year where we can make it happen. The great thing for you is that you do not need New Year's to make that work happen. As I record this now, it's March. This is a long time before New Year's. But if you want to make that happen right now, you can. Make the changes. The disorientation will do you the favor of helping you get started with something you didn't know you could do. And then you can start climbing up. And who knows where you're going to end up. So instead of seeing mental illness as just a terrible thing, I would like you, as a pastor, or as a faith leader, or as somebody who is working with people, to start seeing this as an opportunity. Because it will help them grow if they're willing to build the habits around becoming healthier. And hey, while you're at it, you may as well build some habits for yourself to help you get healthier too. Hopefully you can get disoriented enough to do that for yourself. Next week, we are talking a little bit about another topic altogether. We're talking about post-traumatic growth. We're talking about how things change us and how we grow out of those things. This is actually some of the scientific literature on trauma. It's really cool stuff. So I will see you then.